So good evening, everyone. This is our last night, our last time in our series on the Lotus Sutra. 6 weeks have gone by. Or was it 6 million kalpas? Went pretty fast. And some of you have been here for quite a bit of it, and some of you may have shown up for the first time or the second time, and that's okay too. We've been in the course of our 6 week practice period that we have every year, which is a kind of intensified practice time. Our theme this year has been the Lotus Sutra, which is a long Buddhist text. It's a pre-Zen text that was compiled somewhere around the 2nd century of the Common Era in northern India. And it's full of stories, and we've heard quite a few of the stories in it. Stories within a larger story of Shakyamuni Buddha, the historical Buddha, in a kind of mythic setting where he is, where a great assembly of countless beings has come to hear him preach the Lotus Sutra. And within that setting or narrative arc, lots of other stories are told. Michael and I have been taking turns pretty much doing the talks, with three of our senior members also taking a turn each. And really, it should have been Michael's turn this week, but we have a week-long retreat starting this Saturday, and so he had a lot of work to do for his SFU classes this week, so you've got me again. What I thought I would do tonight is talk a little bit about Dogen Zenji and the Lotus Sutra. Dogen Zenji founded our particular stream of Zen, brought it from China to Japan. It's called Soto Zen in Japanese. And the Lotus Sutra was really important to him. And one of my aims for this practice period was to see if I could understand a little bit more why it was so important to him, why he valued it so highly, because the Lotus Sutra is really different from Zen literature in tone and in content, reflecting their respective origins in Lotus Sutra from Indian culture and much of Zen literature from Chinese and Japanese culture. So, where the Lotus Sutra is, the Lotus Sutra language is ornate and even over the top. The language of Zen literature is spare and poetic. Lotus Sutra stories are didactic and sort of allegorical, whereas Zen stories are cryptic and paradoxical. They're very different, don't you think? Those of you who've had a chance to kind of get the flavor of both. Dogen would have been well acquainted with the Lotus Sutra. For those who don't know who I'm talking about, he lived in the 13th century, so a good 1,000 years later, right, in Japan. And he spent his early years, he ordained when he was maybe 12 or 13, his early years in the Tendai sect. This is before Zen arrived in Japan. The Lotus Sutra was a central text in that sect, so he would have known it well. But even after he went to China and practiced Zen and became acquainted with the Chinese Zen literature, brought it back, Even after that, he continued in his various voluminous writings to cite the Lotus Sutra more than any other of the early Mahayana texts. So thanks to a Zen priest and scholar named Taigen Dan Leighton, who wrote a whole book about Dogen and the Lotus Sutra. I think it was probably his doctoral thesis, which he later had published. Thanks to Taigen, who did all the hard work of searching through Dogen's writings and finding the references to the Lotus Sutra, and for his insights and perspectives, I feel I got a kind of boost on answering some of my questions. And I'll only be able to touch briefly on some of the themes that he found. But first, I want to go back to my talk last week. How many people were here last week? A few of you were, yeah, a number of you were. Last Wednesday, to the talk that I did last week, and to a reference in Dogen to the Lotus Sutra that Taigen doesn't mention at all in his book. And it's a reference to the story of the Dragon Princess. Anybody remember the story of the Dragon Princess from last week? Yeah. She, you may remember that she was only 8 years old, and she became a Buddha very, very quickly, to the consternation of the assembled bodhisattvas and worthies who were present at this mythical assembly with the Buddha, who were all male, and highly doubtful that a mere 8-year-old dragon princess could achieve Buddhahood. So 1,000 years later, here's what Dogen had to say. Oops. And I'll read you a couple of different excerpts here. If you encounter someone who maintains the great Dharma after having received the acknowledgement, you have attained my marrow. You have attained my marrow is something that one of the old Zen teachers, Zen masters, said to his students when he gave them Dharma transmission, or to one in particular. You attained my marrow. So what that means is the teacher has given Dharma transmission or permission to teach, to be a teacher. So if you encounter someone who maintains the great Dharma, having received that acknowledgement from their teacher, whether the person is a pillar or a lantern, a Buddha, a wild fox, a demon, a man, or a woman, you should keep your body and mind on the Zazen seat and attend to the person even for immeasurable eons. And then further to the question of men and women being the same or different in practice, he says, why are men special? Emptiness is emptiness. 4 great elements are 4 great elements. 5 skandhas are 5 skandhas. Women are just like that. Both men and women attain the way. You should honor attainment of the way. Do not discriminate between men and women. This is the most wondrous principle of the Buddha way. So he's pretty unequivocal. That's a big, big change from Indian culture. Then he points to also in old China that there were lay practitioners, people who had not left their households. Some of them are married and have their abodes. Others are celibate, but may still have some worldly concern. However, monks with cloud robes and mist sleeves visit lay people who have clarified Dharma, bow to them, and inquire about the way, just as they do to masters who have left their households. They should also do so to accomplished women, even to animals. So Dogen has a very expansive view of who we might receive Dharma teaching from. How many have ever received a Dharma teaching from an animal? I have. Yeah. He says, on the other hand, even a 100-year-old monk who has not dreamed of the essentials of Buddha Dharma cannot be close to men and women who have attained Dharma. Such a person should not be respected more than as a host or a guest. Even 7-year-old girls who practice Buddha Dharma and express Buddha Dharma are guiding teachers to the four types of disciples. Four types of disciples were monks, nuns, laymen, and laywomen. They are compassionate parents to sentient beings. They are like dragon princesses who have attained Buddhahood. You should make an offering and respect them just as you would respect Buddhas. So there's the reference to the dragon princess. He's also making a reference to the great Chinese Zen master Zhao Zhou, who studied with his teacher, Nanchuan, for 40 years, I think it was. I don't have the story right at my fingertips. And then when his teacher died, he set off on pilgrimage. And he himself was already at this point probably 60 years old. And he said, as he set out on pilgrimage, if I meet a 100-year-old man who requests me to teach him the Dharma, I will. And if I meet a 7-year-old girl who can teach me, I will receive her teachings. Yeah. And then he wandered for another 20 years, I'm sure I have the numbers wrong, before he finally began to teach himself at the age of 80. And then he taught for another 40 years until he was 120. I love that story. That would be my model. Not to start teaching until I'm at least 80. But seems that wasn't an option. Here's another little section that I like from Dogen. Those who are extremely stupid think that women are merely the objects of sexual desire and treat women in this way. The Buddha's children should not be like this. If we discriminate against women because we see them merely as objects of sexual desire, do we also discriminate against all men for the same reason? And then he lists, all the various causes of desire and delusion and confusion. And he says, it is said there are 84,000 objects. Right. Why should we single women out? Do we not look at all of them or discard them all? So Dogen was ahead of his time, I'd say, because despite his very expansive views here, it doesn't mean that in Japan that Buddhist nuns have had equal status with men, especially at an institutional level. And in modern times, they've had to advocate for institutional recognition and support. But listening to Dogen 1,000 years after the Lotus Sutra, I think we can get I could appreciate how the Lotus Sutta opened the door for a more inclusive view of bodhisattva practice, a recognition that all beings are awakening together, and that our bodhisattva practice makes a difference no matter who we are. For those who might be new to that word, bodhisattva means an awakening being, but particularly an awakening being who realizes that our awakening is for the benefit of others. You know, that it's not something we do in isolation, just for ourselves. And that motivates us to awaken. The more I read Dogen's references to the Lotus Sutra, the more I've come to appreciate how the Lotus Sutra inspired his very expansive worldview, the way he sees our lives and practice as intimately grounded and interconnected with the earth and all phenomena. for those of you who've been following along with this, you can maybe remember the visions of myriad bodhisattvas rising up out of the earth, rising up, coming up out of the sea. He also sees our lives and practice as existing within a kind of dynamic matrix of boundless space and time. He doesn't use the kind of hyperbolic descriptions of countless worlds and vast amounts of time that we've heard in the Lotus Sutra. Instead, he presents us a very, I think, sophisticated vision of the oneness of being and time. There's a whole fascicle in Dogen's, this is only one volume, there's two volumes of this, called The Treasury of the True Dharma Eye, and we tend to call the chapters fascicles. There's one that's called Being Time, and we could do a whole series just on that. So you'll have to, for now, take my word that it's quite a sophisticated vision of the way being and time intersect, which is remarkably congruent with the principles of contemporary particle physics. So again, we see a kind of evolution in Buddhist thought in which the Lotus Sutra was kind of pivotal. It was kind of, I see it as a kind of turning point. I hesitate to speak in terms of evolution because that implies a movement from what's more primitive to what's more advanced. And that's not, I think, Dogen's sense or the Lotus Sutra's sense that you may recall, those of you who've been following on that the Lotus Sutra message is that there's only one Buddha vehicle. And within that vehicle, one awakening Buddha body, we could say, within that, there are many different practices and skillful means that the Buddha taught for different time and times and different people, to meet different needs, to motivate us to practice, to walk out of that burning house. Remember, some of you remember the story of the burning house and the children trapped in the burning house and the father having to motivate the children to come out from the burning house because they were absorbed in their toys, playing with their toys. And he had to promise each one a different fancy cart to motivate them to leave a cart pulled by a deer, a sheep, and an ox. And when they all came out, he presented them with the same glorious cart pulled by a white ox, which of course symbolized the one Buddha vehicle. And you may recall that ultimately the Buddha proclaimed that his own birth and death, his own lifespan on earth, was one more example of skillful means to motivate people to practice, to bring people to practice, and that in truth he has an endless lifespan. He's a presence, an ongoing Buddha presence, Buddha nature, which we share without limit. There are so many passages in Dogen's writing that cite the Lotus Sutra. I could go on and on. Taigen Layton wrote a whole book about it. So the one thing I'd like to do tonight, one more thing that I'd like to do, is just touch on a fascicle that he devoted directly to the Lotus Sutra, and it's called Dharma Blossoms Turn Dharma Blossoms. You may recall the title of the Lotus Sutra is Myoho Renge Kyo, Wondrous Dharma Lotus Flower Sutra. Wondrous Dharma Lotus Flower Sutra. So when we call it Lotus Sutra, that's an abbreviation. And in Asia, it's actually called Dharma Flower Sutra. in English it becomes Lotus Flower Sutra. So he's when he says Dharma flower, Dharma flowers turning. Give it to you, right? Dharma blossoms turning, turn Dharma blossoms. And in this passage, he tells a story about the great Chinese Zen master Huineng and a monk who showed up at Huineng's temple and boasted that he had chanted the Lotus Sutra 3,000 times. And Huineng said to him, "Even if you had chanted the sutra 10,000 times, if you don't understand the meaning of it, you won't even know your own errors." This is the second time I've told this story, but I'm going to give Dogen's comment this time. So the monk, whose name was Fa Da, said, "Because I am stupid, I have only been able to follow the words and chant. How can I understand the meaning of it?" Huineng said, "Chant it for me. I will elucidate its meaning for you." So Fa Da started enchanting. And he only got as far as chapter 2. And there are over 20 chapters, 28 or so. And Huineng interrupted him and said, "Stop. The essential meaning of this sutra is the cause of the Buddha's emergence into the world. Many parables are expounded, but there is nothing more than this. What is the single essential matter? It is the Buddha unfolding knowledge and entering realization. You are originally Buddha knowledge. You who have this knowledge are a Buddha. You should trust right now that the Buddha knowledge is your own mind." And then he taught a verse, which I didn't read. I didn't give you last time. This is the verse. He said, "When your mind is deluded, you are turned by the Dharma blossoms. When your mind is enlightened, you turn the Dharma blossoms. If you cannot clarify the meaning after chanting the sutra at great length, you become its enemy. Thinking beyond thinking is right. Thinking about thinking is wrong. If thinking and beyond thinking do not divide the mind, you can steer the white ox cart endlessly." Yeah, so the white ox cart is from that parable I just mentioned, the one vehicle. So, and Dogen goes on to comment about the verse. He says, "What is spoken of as turned by Dharma blossoms is your mind is deluded. Thus, the deluded mind is turned by Dharma blossoms. The meaning is that while the deluded mind is no other than all phenomena, reality is turned by Dharma blossoms. To be turned in this way is neither to be rejoiced in nor sought after, neither to attain nor to arrive. This being so, Dharma blossom turning is not two, not three, as there is only one Buddha vehicle, and the Dharma blossoms turning and being turned are, in reality, one Buddha vehicle, one great matter. These are bits and pieces alone. Thus, do not resent delusion. Do not resent delusion. When you practice, what you practice is the Bodhisattva way, seeing Buddhas through the original practice of the Bodhisattva. Each unfolding of the teaching, each entering into enlightenment is Dharma blossoms turning." He goes on a little bit more in that vein, but like so much of Dogen's writing, this passage can kind of make your head spin. Yeah? If we try to subject it to our sort of conventional, rational thinking. But when he writes like this, it's all in aid of kind of nudging us loose from our dualistic views about delusion and enlightenment. You know, like, this is delusion and this is the world we live in, and we really don't want that. We want enlightenment, right? And what he's saying is that this turning, you know, is not turn it this way, it's delusion, and just turn it that way, it's enlightenment. The relative and the absolute are simultaneous. He's saying, don't to be turned in this way, you know, when we feel like the world is just constantly pushing us around. Yeah, that's delusion. And yet, turn it, and it's enlightenment. Not to be sought after, not to attain, not to arrive. Do not resent delusion. That's a pretty radical thing to say. Yeah? Do not resent delusion. I resent my delusions pretty frequently. How can we live right in the arising of delusion and turn it? Turn it without just seeing it. Just seeing it. Yeah? And then we turn, the Dharma blossoms. And that's okay. Then we, you know, delusion arises again. And this relative and absolute quality of our lives, absolute meaning, the boundlessness, the boundless nature of our mind, our mind which is interconnected always with everything. This simultaneous quality is a kind of infolding and unfolding, a sort of imperceptible flickering that has anyone ever heard of or read of a quantum physicist called David Bohm, B-O-H-M? He describes what he calls the implicate order and the explicate order. And when I read his description of the implicate order and explicate order, I thought, oh my gosh, it's sounds just like Zen descriptions of the relative and the absolute being not separate, which is pretty remarkable. So what's all that have to do with the vicissitudes of our daily lives? Our mean neighbor, or our mean boss, or our spouse's or our child's cancer diagnosis? I think Dogen's message is incredibly hopeful, as is the message of the Lotus Sutra. What they're saying to us is that this very life is the matrix. This very muddy water is what the lotus blossom of awakening arises from. And none of us is excluded from this blossoming. The Dharma blossom is always turning and being turned within us and among us. We help each other wake up by actualizing our practice in every moment of our lives. You may remember the passage in the Lotus Sutra that asks us in our practice to enter the Buddha's room, put on the Buddha's robe, and take the Buddha's seat with great compassion as the room, gentleness and patience as the robe, and the emptiness of all things as the seat. as Huineng said to his student, Fa Da, who had bragged about chanting the Lotus Sutra 3,000 times, he said, "You must chant it every moment from kalpa to kalpa, day and night, without opening a scroll of the sutra." In other words, you must live it. Reading some of the passages in the Lotus Sutra, we could get the impression that all we have to do is offer incense to the Lotus Sutra, or recite it, or copy it, or even chant just its title. There are some sects, Buddhist sects, that have taken this quite literally, and the central practice is to chant the title of the Lotus Sutra, Nam-myoho Renge Kyo. Sects founded by Nichiren, who was a 13th century contemporary of Dogen, took up this practice. But this strong emphasis on faith, faith practice, is not what most Westerners come to Zen practice expecting. We want to be able to do something, right? We want to practice to get somewhere. We want to get enlightened. But let's not be tricked by the Lotus Sutra's own use of skillful means. Let's remember that the Lotus Sutra itself is not a thing. Over and over in the text, the Buddha is about to preach the Lotus Sutra. Like this is, it's the Lotus, it's called the Lotus Sutra, but in the text, the Buddha is about to preach the Lotus Sutra, or some Buddha in the far distant past preached the Lotus Sutra. But it's never explicitly given words. He doesn't actually ever preach it. So this title, the Wondrous Dharma Lotus Flower Sutra, becomes a kind of shorthand, I think, or kind of mantra that stands for both this vast awareness beyond our ordinary comprehension and our understanding of and gratitude for the Dharma, which is offered to us in so many different ways, by Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, disguised as friends or enemies or street people or politicians or trees, rivers and mountains, hummingbirds, coyotes. They're all our Dharma teachers. So tonight I just wanted to give you that little bit of taste of Dogen's way of understanding and speaking about the Lotus Sutra, to give you a sense of how these ancient texts become living documents when we engage with them, as Dogen did. He made it vivid for himself, for his own practice in his day. And the Dharma continues to live and be expressed here, even in our own degenerate times, because it offers a way for us to live in a world that is full of both suffering and beauty, cruelty and courage, with wisdom and compassion. So I hope that some of you have found the Lotus Sutra moving in a way, perhaps off-putting in ways, mystifying, and maybe a little bit fun along the way. And I'd like to close